Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Hi, this is Adam Barrett. Welcome to another edition of Speaking of Reliability. I'm here today again with Chris Stoppelman. Hey, Chris, how's it going?
It's going well, Adam. How are you?
Good, doing good. So what's interesting is a topic you and I were, deciding to talk about, and it's based in some recent experiences, very much connects with some of the open-ended questions we had with our last topic about, reliability initiatives and groups forming and beginning to try to influence culture. And, right now we're talking about events that occur and trying to find the right way to leverage them to advance that.
Yeah, the question is, how are you getting engaged as a reliability engineer within the development activities of a team? And ideally, you get drawn in up front into the development process when you talk about requirement settings and design decisions, so you can influence the design early on. Unfortunately, sometimes it happens that you get pulled in once you're starting to manufacture things or things fail in the field. And it's really very costly and late in the game to start looking at changes.
So the big question is, how do you leverage the team having that experience to have them listen, when you are prescribing these things to do early in the program? Because it's tricky, right? It's very tricky.
It's a good question, and I told you so. It's probably not going to go over very well.
Not at all. It's not. No, it's definitely not. It's, so what's been your experience so far? I've had lots of experiences with that, and I have some, things to share in that. But what's been going on with you with that, where you saw an opportunity to begin to use that to leverage that?
Well, in one of my previous jobs, I was actually lucky to get pulled in fairly early in some of the development and in the evaluation of different materials and in the design decisions around those, or at least at the time when we saw early failures in early testing before we released a design and then getting involved with finding solutions to those failures and making sure that what we end up designing and manufacturing and shipping is solid and doesn't cause any early field failures or any catastrophic failures in the field. Hmm. I've also been on the other end where, the engagement happens after a lot of field failures happen, and there's a huge impact on the organization from a warranty cost perspective, but there's also a huge drain on engineering resources when the developers get pulled into troubleshooting issues in the field that are so in the detail that the customer service or the field service aren't quite familiar with this new product yet and how to troubleshoot it. So especially in time periods early after first product launch, if there are a lot of issues that haven't been resolved before the launch, then there's a huge strain on the engineering community in trying to fix those failures. And that will then impact other projects that they should be working on. So it's cascading down into other projects. You're delaying the project. Things get more expensive and time to market suffers.
Yeah, that whole collateral damage thing, it's so huge. And so difficult to make, to quantify and include in, where do you include that? What budget would you even include that in? How would you be able to show it on paper what it costs them? But it's tremendous because it's disabling to they're going to invest a huge amount of money in these next products. And now effectively by pulling resource from it, they're still going to invest the same amount of money in it, but now it's going to be, the schedule's delayed, which probably can affect, how profitable it is. So yeah, just that kind of collateral damage is tremendous, but it's so hard for us as reliability engineers to try to find a way to make that connection, right, for the people who can control it and to make it quantifiable and to something that could fall into a line item in a budget. So as reliability engineers, we want to look for those opportunities, but figure out how to leverage them correctly and not have them just anger people. And right, you said, yeah, I told you so. You have to stay far away from that. What I've found in my experience, the way I've kind of honed my techniques around this is to, when you are in the arena of panic, disaster, recovery, or I call it the recovery project phase, it just seems to always happen. What I try to do is look for a small win at that moment. something that's not an I told you so, something that's not a, well, you should remember this for next time. Something's that, hey, you're in a ditch. Here's a way that I can help a little bit with getting out of it. You know, it's not a huge win, but something that really comes to the aid in this situation where that's where all the focus is at the moment. And so the way you can prepare for that is think about what tools and methods and things you would want to set up in advance for that situation. So in other words, flip it around from where you're trying to advise them of what they should do as preparation. You could do for preparation for yourself so that you're ready as a responder, a rescue responder, to be ready when things go wrong and help. Because what happens is when you do that and you help them in that time of need, your credibility just took a pretty big bump. So now when you are prescribing things to do that will pay off later, it's coming from a person that has been very helpful and has that credibility, which is very different than just coming from the guy who always says, I told you so. So in a way, you have to take your own advice and prepare. And in your the case of a reliability engineer, prepare for being able to be a first responder.
Yeah, I agree with that. Roll up your sleeves and get in the middle of it and help with the solutions. Sometimes it's bringing different teams together to work on a solution, teams that maybe sometimes would just blame each other rather than work together and just be that impartial voice or impartial leader that brings them to the table and says, hey, let's just look at the facts now. Let's collect data. Let's plan a designed experiment and then make decisions based on data, not on like blaming each other.
Yeah. The roll up of sleeves is a really good term for it. Because I think those are some of the ones I look back where I was able to turn the corner in perception on how the reliability group can help is there was a sense of roll up the sleeves. I can think back to specific ones where even as a, senior manager, there was a truly, very devastating events that were occurring. And I just got in the lab. There was a day where I was in there for 13 hours and with an X-Acto knife in my hand and just root causing, trying to figure out how to make connections between things we were observing and what was happening under the microscope, literally, in a microscope, and then coming up with little tests and trying them somewhere else. And, being able to share with people these observations, which is entirely different than telling them, well, you should do this for a root cause analysis. Well, if we, in an FMEA, whatever, they don't want to hear that then. They just want you to come into the next meeting and be like, look what I found this. I saw this. This could be with this and help direct where energy is going to go. And in that actual situation, that program, I actually ended up a few weeks later jumping on a plane to take some of these observations that we'd made in the lab and seeing if in the field we could, with the issues that were going on in the field, going to the locations where they were occurring, collecting more evidence. Went so far as to hop on a plane. So after that, the perception of what reliability was on a team, I think was very different. And so that then this other initiatives that I had, the real initiatives that were important were, beginning to in the product development process have, get a reliability growth program that's kind of just always there running in the background, generating data, analyzing data, requesting people to participate in that. They were, I think, much more willing having seen the level of concern and caring and involvement.
Yes, I think there'll be many opportunities in a reliability engineer's career where they will think, well, this isn't really my job. This is not my role title. It's not my job description to do this, but if they jump in and help out and make the team successful, that just helps tremendously in building credibility.
Yeah. All right, to our listeners, we're going to take a moment to hear a word from our sponsor, and we'll be right back.
Hi, it's Fred here. Just a quick note on improving your reliability engineering professional development. Join Ascendo Reliability and opt in to the weekly update email list. You'll receive a weekly rundown of all the new content added to the Ascendo Reliability site. Click through the items of interest, including articles, podcasts, webinars, and more. Quick, easy, smart. Join Ascendo Reliability at ascendoreliability.com/go/membership.
Okay. So, Chris, yeah, we were just, you know, talking about the reliability engineers, you know, looking for that opportunity to jump in and help that, you know, advance their credibility so that as they're prescribing other program activities, it's coming from a place, you know, that people respect. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. It reminds me of a phrase that I've heard about skin in the game. And it's, you know, it's a phrase we all know. But I think it's an important one to keep in mind as far as a metric for ourselves as reliability engineers, because we're always walking that funny line of the idea that you can hand something to reliability and it becomes more reliable. We test in reliability. We all know it doesn't work, and it's not, you know, it's not a good use of the discipline. So, you know, our mantra is more of let us help you implement the right tools. Let us help you, you know, improve the product during the design process. So now you're getting to that funny area where they're kind of thinking, hey, wait a minute, are you going to just tell me what to do? And, you know, you're not doing it, you know, which then results in the perspective of reliability guys don't have skin in the game, right? So since that risk is always there, and we do want to push that everybody's doing these tools because that's the only way they're effective. If they are starting to kind of wonder that, seeing that, you know, historically we do jump in right in the ditch, you know, and help out when things are going bad, I think that'll help a lot with that, which then results in these tools and methods becoming, you know, more of a part of the fabric of how everybody operates.
Probably take the shape of, potentially, hey, you know, so this component here doesn't look like it's going to meet our reliability requirements or this material. Let me help you find a component that might, or a material that might be better suited for this application.
Yeah, actually, that's really good. Yeah, we should probably list a few things that from our experience that we've done where, you know, people kind of feel that you're jumping in and helping. And I think you just did name one, is that if you observe, you know, something that, you know, is an issue in a design, not just coming back and reporting that there's an issue, coming back, reporting there's an issue, and then offering some input, you know, having done some legwork for options to improve it. That's a pretty big deal.
Yeah. And I remember another time where I was working with a manufacturing engineer and we had questions about his process, the end product, was in testing showing some issues that we could trace back to his process, and he didn't know what to do about it. He had started up the line or this equipment in the line, and he had used the process that was provided by the equipment manufacturer, and he was using that, and so he wasn't quite sure where to go next. So myself and a quality engineer, we sat down with him and helped them define an experiment. So we did a design of experiment to explore the process window, the process space of his equipment and process that he was responsible for. And maybe he wasn't quite sure how to do it himself, and he just needed a little bit of guidance. And once we had sat down with him and gave him a little action plan, he was more than happy to go off and do this. And the process improved, and the quality of the product improved. And sometimes it's that, you know, our fellow engineers aren't always sure what to do next or how to go about it. And we have some tools in our toolkit, being reliability and quality professionals, that we can pull out and help them with.
Yeah. And it's not even the tools. It's that we've seen a lot, right? I mean, they spend most of their time in the world of design and development and creating, and we spend, you know, our time in the, you know, in the world of destruction and breaking and having things fail, right? So we've seen a lot of things fail a lot of different ways and seeing changes that helped, you know, increase robustness against them. So yeah, we can't, you know, they probably would appreciate that, that wealth of knowledge that, you know, we've seen a lot of things break, and some of the things we saw improve it might be something that applies, or at least inspire that, you know, inspire them to think in a new direction. So, you know, that's a something that I think generally is very appreciated, and it should be offered, you know, as we summarize, you know, testing results.
Yeah, data analysis too. Yeah, when we talk about testing results, you know, not all engineers have that experience in looking at data from different angles and using statistics. And some of the tools that we've picked up in our career.
Yeah, that's true. That is a big one too. Is that, you know, the idea of giving them a data set is kind of giving them a, you know, a self-assembled kit. It's a piece of IKEA furniture. You know, the individual pieces aren't worth a lot. You got to do something to turn it into something, you know, valuable. And if in turn we do all the extra steps to where we provide them with the information from the data, and a lot of times I even offer it in slide form so they aren't you know, in addition to the report, so they aren't having to, you know, go through the report if they're in a rush and try to pull out the pieces and summaries they want to include for, you know, a higher level in the organization above them to communicate either a risk or, you know, something that's going to be a part of a decision for a phase gate. By handing them, you know, a few summary points or a graph on a slide is a big deal for them because it's very easy for us. We're already knee deep in it, right? It doesn't take much to write out a few bullets or to copy and paste a picture you're throwing into an appendix, but it's a lot more effort for them to go and pull it out and do it. And that kind of thing can be greatly appreciated. There's a real sense of you're nurturing, you know, their role and the deliverables they're accountable for. And it's really simple to do.
Yeah. And often as reliability engineers, we've been closer to the decision makers and having had to present and roll up information in a way that helps the decision makers come to a decision. And maybe some junior level engineers they're so knee deep in the data, you know, they want to talk about details, and some of the higher management just doesn't care about that and it doesn't help them make decisions. So yeah, like you were saying, help them roll it up into something that management understands.
Yeah, that's actually, you make an interesting point with that too, that, you know, I was saying how we have so much exposure to what failures look like and stress to fail mode relationships where we can offer, you know, some really good perspective on that. But you actually just made a really good point. We can offer a lot of really good perspective as well on how this information influences decisions, right? Because we see that every day. We, you know, this is our contribution to the program, and then, you know, just as well directly to program decisions that are made at a lot of different levels. So we know what is helpful information and what's not, or how to distill it down. And yeah, they don't do that every day as well, because the type of information they commonly communicate is, you know, feature development and, you know, all kinds of other things. So yeah, we also have a lot to offer there, helping with that summarizing, just because simply we're in there so much more consistently. So it seems like we found a lot of good little ways to improve that relationship and that build of credibility that will help us then in the larger picture get these methodologies we want to be a part of the design and development process that have these very long lead return on investment, so they're hard to sell. But by, you know, contributing in ways with very short lead time return on investments, we build the credibility that we can, you know, transfer that credibility over to the advisement for the other ones. And it seems like that's a pretty good method that we're both agreeing we've seen success with.
Yeah, go for the quick and easy wins first to build that credibility.
Yeah, it's slow steps. That's good. All right, good. Well, I think we compiled some good advice there. Hopefully it's helpful to people out there who are trying to increase the influence of reliability in their organization. So, and please, everybody, feel free to comment. We'd love to see feedback and comments. And so, Chris, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me today. I think we generated a lot of good information that hopefully will help a lot of people. And to our listeners, I hope we see comments from you and your experiences. So thanks again, Chris.
Thanks, Adam.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.